This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast. This is K. Bharat Kumar. The Union government last week cut excise duties on fuel sales in a bid to temper galloping inflation. Is this move adequate? Are there other factors that are spurring inflation? If so, are there levers that the government could move to arrest a further deterioration? To help offer some perspectives, we have with us today Ms. Aditi Nayyar, Chief Economist at ICRA Ratings. Hello, Ms. Nayyar. Welcome, and thank you for sparing the time to be with us today. So thank you so much. Really appreciate your being here to share your perspectives on recent moves by the government to temper galloping inflation rates. In your note on Saturday, you had indicated that inflation would print 6.5 to 7% in May, and compared with April's significantly in excess of 7.8%, and would cool by about 20 basis points going forward. This is likely not sustainable if either oil prices continue to rise or if other factors spurring inflation continue unabated. Do you see the situation deteriorating going forward for any particular reason on any front?
Thank you. So let me just clarify. Basically, we are now expecting two things. As far as the May CPI inflation number is concerned, firstly, with a high base effect and with the partial impact of the excise duty cut on petrol and diesel, we're expecting the number to now come down to 6.5% to 7% for the month of May. Overall, we expect the excise duty cut to have a first round impact of 18 to 20 basis points on the CPI inflation. Also, a couple of states have so far come forth with the VAT cuts on these fuels. Maybe some others will follow suit. And that will also help to determine how much second round impact there is on the CPI inflation going forward. Overall, we expect the CPI inflation to average 6.5% in FY23. That's our current estimate. Of course, if there are further shocks, either in terms of commodity prices rising going ahead, or perhaps, from a monsoon which is not well distributed, then certainly we could see further upward pressure on the CPI inflation. But given the domestic agri outlook in terms of the heat wave, which has impacted the wheat yields for the rabi crop, but a monsoon which is expected to be normal and above last year reservoir storage levels as of now, coupled with some negatives such as concerns on fertilizer availability and perhaps even labor availability in the rural areas, we are looking at a very modest increase in agri output in FY23. And that then, along with the global factors which are leading to high edible oil prices and feedstock prices for poultry, for example, overall we expect that food inflation is likely to remain on the higher side. And that itself will be another source of stickiness in the CPI inflation trajectory going ahead. So possibly there could be very few months in FY23 where CPI inflation actually dips below 6%. So it's going to remain an uncomfortable trajectory going ahead.
Okay. So if we look only at oil prices for now, I know there are so many factors, commodities and so on and so forth, geopolitical tensions and all that. If we just look specifically at oil prices, do you see stability or a yo-yoing of fuel retail sales prices in the coming few months? Because we've seen contrasting predictions. I think I read a JP Morgan report that says average of 104 a barrel for all of 2022. But in Davos, our oil minister also said if oil price continues to increase, then we're probably looking at a recession. And I'm sure he was referring to multiple parts of the world, not just India. So any such fears that stalk us right now?
See, as far as the crude oil price is concerned, even the last couple of months have been very volatile. Setting aside that one day of $130 per barrel, even after that, we've seen the Indian basket price ranging between, let's say, 97 on the downside and 113, 114 on the upside. That's not a narrow range. That's a pretty significant range as far as crude oil prices are concerned. And perhaps, we need to be prepared to at least deal with this kind of a $15 to $20 a barrel volatility even going ahead, depending on how the supply demand news flow is on any particular day. And both on the supply and demand side, news flow has been itself volatile, between concerns on demand coming from China, what will be the impact of sharp Fed rate hikes on demand in the US, for example, versus sticky supply side issues both from OPEC and OPEC Plus. So I think we need to be prepared for oil prices moving in a pretty wide band even going ahead. Average, however, I would expect to be in the range of $100 to $105 per barrel for this fiscal year.
Okay. So as a corollary to that, I know before the war began, our imports of Russian oil were not so significant as a portion of our total oil imports. I know it's been increasing, but it would be impractical to expect that discounted prices of Russian oil would actually help offset some of our losses, right? I mean, there's only so much India can import in terms of significant quantities that were ramping up over a short period of time. Or do you see any positives down that path there?
See, it's very difficult to say with certainty whether the actual price is softer because of discounted imports which are taking place right now. That could be one of the reasons why prices were stable through the latter part of April as far as the retail sales, selling prices of petrol and diesel are concerned. But I don't think I'm in a position to say with any kind of certainty that is what led to the stable prices, even when the Indian basket price itself, the way that it's constructed, was a lot more volatile during that period.
Okay. You know, I also read that state governments do have fiscal headroom to cut their share of duties on fuel. And today, for instance, the Hindu itself had a data point that said, you know, whether state governments act or not, the act of the central government cutting excise duties does have an impact on the value of the VAT that state governments take away. Do you see any more action on the front where state governments would act, especially after Kerala and Maharashtra have taken the lead? But are there any possibilities, or with political differences, you see the status quo continuing for the next few months?
So most states impose VAT in an ad valorem manner. And therefore, when the excise duty is cut, the per liter VAT collection on petrol or diesel automatically goes down for the state government. So that is why you would have noticed that there is a difference between the actual cut in the excise duty announced by the center and the extent to which the pump prices went down. The pump price reduction is larger because of this automatic reduction in the VAT which comes in because most states have an ad valorem VAT structure. Now, a couple of states have gone ahead and announced VAT cuts of their own. Maybe they are assessing their fiscal space to be adequate. But there is one very big challenge which is looming for state governments, which is that the GST compensation period is ending. The 5-year transition period of GST compensation is ending in a little over a month. And some states we've seen have had a fairly large dependence on GST compensation flows relative to the size of their revenue receipts in the last few years. And we think that that might make them a little cautious in rushing into announcing VAT cuts, given the fact that as of now, there has been no extension which has been announced for the GST compensation. So I'll be myself curious to see how many other states follow suit. But I think they're going to be a little circumspect because there is this major structural challenge which is looming in just about 35 to 40 days.
I saw in your theme note, I think that came out yesterday on higher taxes, excise duty cuts, that higher taxes would actually help offset losses arising out of these duty cuts. You know, I was just curious to understand if at all there is an impact of inflation itself on the buoyancy in tax collections. So is there a correlation that we have saying, you know, we actually saw higher tax collections, but somewhat contributed by the inflation itself, or is that negligible, that impact?
Yes, higher prices do lead to higher tax collections, particularly on things like GST. There is a positive correlation over there. But let me just give a background why we expect there to be this cushion on the receipt side, which will absorb the excise duty cuts. Basically, when we look at the provisional data for FY22 that has been shared by the Government of India, the tax revenues are significantly higher than what was estimated in the revised estimates for FY22. And therefore, the growth embedded in the budget estimate for FY23 is very, very low. Now, if we assume that the nominal GDP growth is going to be somewhere in the range of 14 to 15% in FY23, then non-excise revenues may also grow by a similar amount. And that is giving us this very large headroom in the budget relative to what was estimated for FY23 for the non-excise revenues. And a portion of the upside, of course, will be shared with the states. But even netting all of that off, pulling in the higher, the spillover of the LIC inflow, disinvestment inflow to FY23 from FY22, and offsetting the lower than budgeted RBI surplus, we still think that total receipts could be about 1 trillion higher than the budget level, which is quite significant.
Okay. Related to this, I had a question. Because when 2016, when the GST regime was announced and, a few months later it set in, the thumb rule was, analysts were telling us that if you can manage 1 lakh crore worth of receipts a month, or average of 12 lakh crores a year, then you're covered. There is, you haven't lost too much just because the new regime came in. The last few months, probably exceeding a year, we've seen the run rate per month go up much higher than the 1 lakh crore. So you would say that, the GST regime has actually succeeded in ensuring collections, of course, but has it also expanded the tax base, or has it plugged leaks? What would you say, what would your take on the GST regime itself, the success of the regime itself be?
See, 1 lakh crore, as you're putting it, was a very early number. And under the GST Compensation Act, the revenue base was expected sort of to grow by 14% every year. And if it didn't, then the difference was to be paid out as GST compensation. What we've seen in the last 2 years is that the GST compensation requirements of the states have been very large. So that's sort of, one way of putting it, that even though the headline numbers have grown, they have not grown by that notional 14% year on year on year that was envisioned, barring which GST compensation would be provided. Having said that, I do believe that compliance has improved quite significantly after GST has come in, and the GST e-invoicing and e-way bill system has contributed to that. So there are successes. I'm not saying that GST has not been successful, but perhaps the revenue buoyancy has not really materialized to the extent that was anticipated or hoped. And of course, the pandemic has had a negative impact on consumption and on GST collections in FY21 and FY22.
Sure. Okay. So the actions on part of the government on other fronts, its actions on duties on iron ore and steel, and then actions on wheat export, have evoked some negative reactions. What is your take on both of these fronts? And added to that, what other levers does the government have to temper inflation? If you take a 30,000 foot view and say these are the things that the government can do in addition to cutting excise duties on fuels.
See, basically, the government would have limited tools in the current situation where it's global supply side factors which are really driving inflation right now. That is the origin of the inflation. The fact that it's getting more generalized, of course, is a concern for us in India. But the basic origins of this high inflation episode are broadly stemming from global supply side factors. And it's very hard for either Indian fiscal or monetary policy to really be able to clamp down on it. So what can fiscal policy do? It can tweak the duties and cesses to reduce the landed cost of imports. We can look at selectively using export bans as well, although those make us it's not very easy always to go ahead with those. And on the monetary policy side, monetary policy can really try and prevent inflationary expectations from unhinging in a situation like what we're in currently. So we are expecting that the monetary policy after the excise duty cut will not need to be terribly front loaded now. However, it's clear that we need to get back to a pre-pandemic rate of the repo rate. And therefore, we are expecting a 40 basis points hike in the repo rate in the June policy, followed by a 35 basis points rate hike in the August policy, and then a pause to reassess the impact on growth. We are right now seeing a terminal rate of 5.5% for the repo rate by sometime by the middle of next calendar year. But we do expect that after we get back to the pre-pandemic level of 5.15% for the repo rate, then monetary policy actions are going to be very, very data dependent after that.
So if I just take the opportunity to move away from inflation and look at your most recent note on your predictions for Q4 GDP growth, I was not so pleasantly surprised to find that your estimate for agriculture, you indicate that that too may have grown feebly. I'm sure the impact of the heat wave, and you mentioned that in the early part of our conversation. So those factors like those may have contributed. But this seems a significant contrast from the first wave of the pandemic when agriculture actually came to the rescue, being one of the few sectors that showed growth. So are heat waves the only factor to blame? Is there anything else that you see that you have seen which may actually impact growth going forward? You did talk about the unpredictability of monsoons, but anything else that would have missed my eye?
See, for Q4, it's basically the heat wave which has caused us to reduce our forecast for the agricultural GVA growth, the gross value added growth. We've seen a significant downward correction in the latest advanced estimate for crop production, particularly for the wheat crop. And wheat is very dominant as far as the Rabi output is concerned. So Q4 and Q1, possibly this is going to be a major reason for dampening the agricultural GVA growth. Going ahead, like I was saying, we have, some concerns on the fertilizer availability and also on the manpower availability. So in the last 2 years, just to recap, when we look at FY21 and FY22, once the pandemic started, both of those years saw a good amount of monsoon rainfall. And we also had a lot of reverse migration in the initial part of the pandemic. So there were more people available in the rural areas to actually till the land, and with good monsoons in those 2 years, the acreage also went up quite significantly. Now, if a lot of people are going to shift back to the urban areas for contact intensive jobs in this year, then the manpower availability in the rural areas may be lower than what it's been in the last 2 years. And even with a normal monsoon, we therefore may find that the fringe areas, the outside areas, may not end up getting cultivated, the less fertile areas. And I really wouldn't be surprised if acreage doesn't increase and actually ends up falling a little bit in FY23. So that is something that we do need to watch out for in terms of risk on the agricultural output going ahead.
So if we take this in combination with inflation, which is going to stay uncomfortably higher than 6% you mentioned in the very near future, and uneven recovery in terms of economic growth. So we are looking at a very serious possibility of stagflation, right? Stagnant growth and inflation giving us a double whammy.
See, stagflation is a very big word. I try to stay away from it. Our forecast for GDP growth for FY23 is still 7.2%. That's really, it's hard to quantify a 7.2% growth as being stagnant. So yeah, I won't use that word.
Okay, but if you have to sum it up qualitatively for our listeners, would you say that you're just optimistic, but cautiously so, because there are so many uncertainties with the war and so on and so forth?
Absolutely. I think, there are going to be sectors of the economy that may do better in the current situation. Possibly a service sector will see a revival. People are more confident. Vaccination is quite widespread. So that sector may actually see more of a revival in the coming year. And industrial margins are likely to be under pressure because of high commodity prices. Agriculture, I just talked about, we are a little cautious on the outlook. So it would be a sort of sector-specific situation going ahead. And there may be some households with better income certainty than what they've seen in the last couple of years, and other households who are going to find that their budgets are getting eaten into because of high inflation. So even at the household level, the responses may be quite different to the kind of situation that we are expecting to unfold in FY23.
Okay. I've exhausted my list of questions. Anything else you think we could have missed out? Anything of consequence to this conversation? Please feel free to go ahead.
No, I think we've covered everything.
Excellent. Okay. Really appreciate your being with us, Ms. Nair. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
In Focus, we'll be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.